Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hey everyone, I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, a very powering hour, the latest on juicing, or using, according to this newest study in the British Journal of Nutrition, juice powders, and what it does for you. All good. Then we're going to explore the effects of dried plum on bone health. And Helicobacter, if you have a high salt diet, as most people do, and you have this bacterium in your stomach, far more risky for cancer. How can we help you lower your risk of having a stroke? It's easy and inexpensive, and I'll get into that. Every day, I bring the latest peer-reviewed mainstream science that shows how we can live a longer and healthier life. Then we go to an environmental segment. We do more environmental programming than any other radio program in the world. Today, I'm going to hold off talking about the environment till I have a guest. I'm going to ask the guest what he's going to do for you and I. Europe is doing something about the honeybees. The honeybees are dying, colony collapse, and it's due to a particular type of pesticide called neonicotinoids. And we've known about their destruction, even having cited specific testimony from working groups of scientists in the EPA and the USDA. So if we know it causes the bees to become disoriented, fly away from their hives, then why haven't we banned this? We'll talk about that. My guest in the second part of our today will be Tony Avella. He is a Democratic state senator from the 11th district in New York, and he was a member of the New York City Council from the borough of Queens from 2002 until 2009. And I rarely have on anyone who's a politician. I've made a few exceptions, but only a few. Dennis Kucinich, Alan Grayson, Ron Paul, because they had the courage to stand up for you and I on multiple issues that mattered. This is not to say that I will never have on a politician. I just don't like them. And I know that most Americans don't like them. We don't trust them because so many of them have betrayed our confidence and our trust. So today, I'm going to grill this guy. Never met him, never spoken with him, but I'm going to see if he will give us non-politically speak. Just speak honestly. Will he or will he not ban gas hydrofracking and promote it? Will he promote closing down Indian Point nuclear facility? Will he promote a state law to label genetically engineered foods? Will he promote helping small businesses that are the lifeblood of the city? More employees work for small businesses than for any other source. And yet, it's the small businesses that are being killed by the corruption of the relationship of people from the politicians at the state level and the city council level. Let's see how honest he is. If you know anything about me, you know I never blink and I don't bluff. So I'm going to see, do we just have another sleazebag, low-life, degenerate politician? Or do we have someone who has the courage to stand up and take a position? It'll be an interesting conversation. I also never have celebrities on, and I make no exception. I just don't like any of them, quite frankly. I don't like the concept that somehow a human being is considered or perceived better than, more valued than, the rest of us because of their fame or wealth or significance. I can respect him if I see him in a movie and either enjoy that performance or not. I paid my money. I walk out of the theater. That experience either stays or goes. but that doesn't mean that they should be seated ahead of me or you in a restaurant. I believe that everyone should be treated with the same level of respect, and they don't want to be treated like you and I. That's why I don't have them on the air. Now, also today, if we have time, I want to deal with an issue with this legislator about something that really bothers me. And that is, we keep hearing how unique we are from pundits like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, the greatest nation in the world. I'm going to challenge this notion by how we treat the least amongst us, our children. If we are indeed as great a nation, as capable as we claim, then why are our children suffering? I have all the details, all documented. No great nation would brag when so many of their children are suffering. And I doubt that I will get to my commentary, Moral Monstrosity, America's For-Profit Gulag System, our prison system, our private prison system. Now, Bowie, let's begin. Every day, no exceptions, I drink juice throughout the day. Now, 96 to 97% of all juice is water. And your body is made up of anywhere from 72 to 74% water, depending upon the tissue. But we need it every day, and we should have clean, healthy water. Most people, I guess, assume that whatever comes out of a tap is clean and healthy. It is not. And when people have juices, they're frequently not asking out on the street, is this from organic certified produce? If it's not, and you're drinking apple juice, you're drinking something really polluted. More than 42 separate pesticides and sprays go on the average apple tree. Otherwise, you can end up with like a scab on the outside of the apple. I'm sure you've seen some. Certainly, if you've had your own apple tree or if you've gone up to the apple orchards, you've seen that. Those are cosmetically defective, so therefore stores will not buy them. But there's nothing wrong with it. It just means that the worm went up through the system of the tree and ate itself out the apple. The scab is sealing the apple to protect it. Absolutely nothing wrong with the apple. But then they spray the trees and the roots of the trees that pick up the pesticides and then take those pesticides right through the tree. So you cannot wash off the pesticides from apples. They're in the apple. That's also true for something like watermelon. I would never eat a non-organic watermelon. Anything that can absorb through its root system that is high in water, pesticides, is going to be high in pesticides. So I'd want to make sure that I had organic produce. Then I'm not only getting clean water, I'm getting all the polyphenols, chlorophyll, and nutrients that can really repair the damage to my DNA. We have been led to believe that as we age, the best that we can do is prevent premature aging by not smoking and drinking, not eating fried foods, not eating foods that are strong on our allergic reactions that are biochemistry, like gluten from wheat, dairy from any form of cheese, yogurt, cottage cheese. Instead, go towards really healthy items, and that's half the equation. Here's the other half. You can go do more than slow down the aging process. You can actually reverse damage done to your DNA, your brain, your heart, your liver, your kidneys. If you flood the body with healing polyphenols and phytonutrients. Now, antioxidants trap free radicals. That won't reverse aging. It merely slows it down. It is the other chemicals. Anywhere from 150 to 300 different chemicals in a single food. Hence, the more combination of foods you eat, the more chemicals you have that can help reverse aging and slow it down. So an apple is great. Lowers your cholesterol, lowers the bad triglyceride levels, helps thin the blood, speeds up digestion. It's good on every level. Now add in grapes. Now you have something different. It will help the eyes and the brain and the heart. Now add in, let's say, kiwi. Each thing you add in to a mix during a day, either eating it whole or juicing it or compounding powder, you're increasing its healing potential. Therefore, when I take my juice in the morning, I put compounding powders in it of both vegetable and fruits, and as many as I can get, and then I do that throughout the day, ensuring that my cells are nurtured as much as possible. The aging is reversed as much as possible. Why do you think Sam Skinner and Sid Howard and Thelma Wilson, these are legends in track and field, they're still setting records with every new age group they go into? How are they able to do that? Because they're not aging normally. They're not just slowing down the aging, they're reversing the aging by feeding the musculature, the DNA, the mitochondria, nutrients that actually repair damage. And hence the idea that you can't grow younger again is not true. If you live a really vitally healthy life, I'm talking about where you don't compromise and you're disciplined, 60 becomes 40, 50 becomes 35, 70 becomes 50, 80 becomes 60. That is what's possible at the biological level. This is from a study done at the Institute for Nutrient Research and Sports Nutrition in Graz, Austria. Here's what it says, and I'll quote it. 8 weeks of supplementation also were associated with improvement in microcirculation in women. That means your brain and your extremities. Article published in the British Journal of Nutrition, quote, the overall result from the present study is that 8 weeks of supplementation with an encapsulated fruit, berry, vegetable concentrate, that's your powder, to decrease the oxidation of proteins and lipids in plasma and reduce low-grade inflammation in overweight and obese women compared with placebo group. So what we have is you either get a fruits and vegetables or you get a placebo. They're measuring inflammation, and inflammation is in almost every single disease. You name the disease, diabetes, inflammation, cancer, heart disease, arthritis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, inflammation, macular degeneration, cataracts, prostate cancer, inflammation. Turn off inflammation, and therefore you're helping to stop disease. Have your powders. They can help. Now, most Americans have a high salt diet. Not good. We eat more salt in one hamburger in a fast food restaurant than our body requires in 3 days. That's just one item at one meal. I've calculated, sitting across from me, people who eat regularly in fast food restaurants who are consuming over 10,000 milligrams of sodium a day. If you were to look at their arteries, and if you were to see the destruction, the important sheathing inside the arteries, the epithelium, if you were to see their blood pressure dangerously high, you look at the nephron cells, the tubules in their kidneys, not filtering blood well. These are people that may be 20, but biologically they're closer to 50. This is the latest. This is from Vanderbilt University, and here's what it says, published in the Journal of Infection and Immunity, that when you have a high salt diet and you are putting yourself at a greater risk of gastric cancer, add in H. pylori bacteria and you really increase the rate of gastric cancer. Millions of Americans have this bacteria. So, not good. Now, how can we lower the risk of stroke? Simple. Oh, and by the way, what is my solution for getting off the high sodium? Simply, it's an easy combination. Mix lime and lemon in equal parts and put that on anything you would normally have. For example, when I bake a potato, I'll pour lemon juice on it. Tastes just like salt. Extra virgin organic olive oil. At the same time, a little bit of coconut oil, and then put your seasonings on. Great tasting. So if you mix lime and lemon, you get something that virtually is identical in taste. Or you can try apple cider vinegar and lemon. That's great also in recipes that require salt. So now let's say that we already have high blood pressure. 60 million Americans do. Probably more. Here's the latest on this. And this is from the British Medical Journal. It says, quote, extra fiber creates lower risk of stroke. Well, that's good. Now, what would be the best source of that fiber? This was the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. All right, here are the best fibers I would suggest to lower your blood pressure. And they're tasty. Blueberries, pomegranate, and apple skins. In fact, if you have high blood pressure, here's something that's very easy. Simply peel 5 apples. Now, keep the apples. You can juice them, but or dry them in an overnight dehydrator at low temperature. But the skin is where almost all the nutrient in an apple is. And then throw those into a blender with a pint of blueberries and put in some vitamin C, buffered vitamin C, and let it blend. Now, you got to take that rather quick because it's going to gel. It's going to look like Jell-O. And then you put that in to a smoothie, or you put it into a hot cereal or a cold cereal. But get it into your body. It's just going to cleanse that whole system, but it's also going to lower your blood pressure. And it'll also take extra cholesterol out of the system because you've got both soluble and insoluble fibers in there. So it's really good for you. Absolutely super healthy and delicious tasting. I'm Gary Nall, and that's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting from our studios, New York City. Just a couple quick comments, announcements, and then we're going to go to our commentary, and then in about 10 minutes, our guest. I will be in Woodstock at the Woodstock Community Center screening the new documentary, Seeds of Death, this Saturday at 7 p.m. There are no reservations. It is free. It's a first-come, first-serve. And if you need further information, call 845-679-1025. 845-679-1025. I really like the artistic and activist community up in Woodstock, and I like to go up there and spend some quality time discussing the social issues that are important to us, and especially with grassroots movements gaining strength, especially on genetic engineering. All of the screenings I've ever done there have been packed. The latest was so packed, I actually had to have a discussion outside with about 300 because they couldn't fit inside. So hopefully you'll get there on time, get a seat. And I want to thank the 6 people who called yesterday after my announcement that we were absolutely sold out at the Theater for the New City screening of Seeds of Death this coming Tuesday at 7:30. 6 people called and gave up their seats. So now 6 people who couldn't come can. If you'd like to join me to to watch the documentary, have a discussion lecture afterwards, down on 12th Street and 1st Avenue on Tuesday evening at 7:30, call 212-254-1109, 212-254-1109. Now, also for those who want to be guided and helped by a really good team of nutritionists and others involved in helping people make healthy lifestyle choices, and there are gazillion people who need that, you can call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000. The counseling is free. I hire these people. I pay them a great salary so that you can get the best help I can find. And I'm always looking for quality people who are good counselors with qualified backgrounds. This is a commentary that I think that we should pay some attention to. It's from Niall Bowie, and it's called Moral Monstrosity, America's For-Profit Gulag System. After I read this, we're going to open this up. I'm not going to do all of it, but enough for you to get the message. Then we're going to go to our talkback early on. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. The private prison population in the United States has rocketed 1,700% over the last 20 years, mostly on the shoulders of the deep-pocketed prison lobby, and the business continues to thrive. Try confining yourself to a small room in your home, like a bathroom or a closet, and spend a few hours there. One only cringes to imagine the detrimental psychological effects that kind of solitude creates for individuals who are subjected to solitary confinement for years at a time, knowing only the walls of their cells and the shades of light that creep across them. The abhorrent state of affairs at the Guantanamo facility often makes international headlines and arguably overshadows the calamity that is the U.S. domestic prison system, where over 6 million people are subject to some form of correctional supervision, an amount exceeding those who toiled in the Soviet gulags during Stalin's regime. In the United States, some 50,000 inmates pass their days in solitary confinement. While there's undoubtedly no shortage of violent criminals in America's jails, millions are doled out annually by privately owned prison lobbyists directly to politicians in an effort to influence harsher zero-tolerance legislation and mandatory sentencing for many non-violent offenses. While the U.S. faces economic stagnation and unprecedented spending cuts to programs of social uplift, business is booming for the private prison industry. Like any other business, these institutions are run for the purpose of turning a profit. State and federal prisons are contracted out to private companies who are paid a fixed amount to house each inmate per day. Their profit depends upon spending the minimum amount of necessary on each inmate day-to-day, allowing private hands to pocket the remaining money. For the corrections conglomerates of America, success depends on housing the maximum number of inmates for the longest potential time as inexpensively as possible. Consider that the United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world, far surpassing any other nation. For every 100,000 Americans, 743 citizens sit behind bars. The harsher sentences meted out to non-violent offenders in contrast to other industrialized nations speaks volumes of America's enthusiastic embrace of a prison-industrial complex. The number of people imprisoned under state and federal custody increased 772% from 1970 to 2009, largely due to the incredible influence of private correction corporations wield against the American legal system. The argument is that by subjecting correctional services to market pressures, efficiencies will be increased and prison facilities can be run at a lower cost due to market competition. What these privatizations produce, in turn, is a system that destroys families by incentivizing the mass long-term detention of nonviolent criminals, a system that is increasingly difficult to deconstruct and reform due to millions paid out to state and federal policymakers. According to reports issued by advocacy groups Public Campaign, The three major correction corporations are Corrections Corporation of America, CCA, the GEO Group, and Cornell. They've spent $22 million lobbying Congress in recent years as a means of influencing policymaking at the federal level. At least $3.3 million have been given to political parties, candidates, and their political action committees. $7 million has been given to state candidates and political parties, including $1.9 in just one recent year, the highest amount in the past decades. Senators Lindsey Graham and John McCain have received significant sums from the private prison corporations, while Chuck Schumer, chair of the Rules Committee on Immigration and Border Enforcement, received tens of thousands from lobbyists. The prison lobby thrives off the laws that criminalize migrants and submit them to mandatory detention prior to being deported, sometimes for up to 10 months or more. Private firms has consistently pushed for the classification of immigration violations as felonies to justify throwing more and more immigrants behind bars. The number of illegal immigrants being incarcerated inside the United States has risen exponentially under Immigration and Customs Enforcement, an agency responsible for annually overseeing the imprisonment of 400,000 foreign nationals at a cost of nearly $2 billion. The private industry has become increasingly dependent on immigration detention contracts and the huge contributions of the prison lobby towards drafting Arizona's controversial immigration law is not unexpected. And then it goes on to talk about in each state how these people spend their money and what they get in return. They get billions in return. So there are millions. Generally, it works this way. For every $1 million you give in lobbying, you get $100 million in return. That's a pretty good return. 100 to 1. Let's say hello to my guest who's standing by. Then we'll go to our talkback segment. I gave you his background a little earlier on in the program, and he is on the line now from Albany, New York. Welcome to the program, Tony Avella.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show. And by the way, I'm not in Albany today. I'm back in my district in Bayside, Queens.
Okay. Tony, I almost never have on politicians. The only three politicians I've ever had on were, well, actually four. He wasn't actually a politician. He was running, Ralph Nader, and Dennis Kucinich, and Alan Grayson, and Ron Paul. And one of the reasons I don't have politicians on is because they lie every time they breathe.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. In fact, if you call me a politician, I consider that an insult.
Good. Okay. I'm going to ask you a series of questions before I get to some local issues, but I'd like your response, and please just give us a yes or no. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This audience is a highly educated social issue audience. We bring to the air issues that need to be addressed, and that is including closing down Indian Point and our nuclear facilities and changing over to other forms of non-polluting, non-dangerous technologies. Do you support closing down Indian Point nuclear facilities?
Yes.
We are opposed adamantly, completely, unequivocally, based upon the environmental science that we have, not the corporate spun pseudoscience of the fracking industry. We want to see gas hydrofracking not allowed in New York State. Do you support or oppose to gas hydrofracking?
I am opposed to hydrofracking. In fact, I am leading the effort in Albany against hydrofracking. I introduced the ban legislation.
Okay, good. We are opposed to all genetic engineering of our food because the science has shown repeatedly that there have been no long-term studies on the health consequences of eating any of the soy, corn, any of the other products, including dairy, that have been genetically manipulated. We don't want to see the American public wake up one day to learn that somehow the genome was infiltrated and changed, and from viruses, bacteria, reptiles, and other insects that have been used in genetic engineering. So we are opposed to genetic engineering per se, but we're really looking to see a law passed in New York and state and every state that any food that is genetically engineered must be labeled as such. The public has a right to determine through freedom of choice, yes or no. So would you support or not the labeling of genetically engineered foods?
I definitely support. In fact, I don't think I've written legislation like that, but I think I am a co-sponsor of an existing bill.
All right. Now, right now in Europe, in fact, it hasn't even been released in the United States. It's on this morning's Scientific American. I'll quote this. Europe set to vote on pesticide ban to save the honeybees. Quote, a proposed ban of pesticides called neonicotinoids is gathering scientific support as some experts are calling for more field studies. The goal is to reverse massive honeybee hive die-offs, which are also affecting U.S. farmers. Across the globe, hives of honeybees are dying off in a phenomenon known as colony collapse disorder. Among the proposed culprits are pesticides called neonicotinoids, which are supposed to be less harmful to beneficial insects and mammals than the previous generation of chemicals. Debate over neonicotinoids has become fierce. Conservation groups in the United States, Europe, have called for a ban on their use. But agricultural organizations, like Monsanto, have said, no, they're not a problem. Now, in this regard, they're actually moving to see that they're banned. Now, I'm also a beekeeper. I'm a certified organic farmer. I've taught farming since my brother and I, Steve's first fertilizer farm upstate New York in 1972, which was the only teaching organic farm in the eastern part of the United States outside of Rodell's farm in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. And so we've taught tens of thousands of people how to do organic sustainable farming and beekeeping. And so I don't have any bee collapse, but in the United States today, and I just did a program on this the other night, as many as 80% of a beekeeper's total bee population per year is disappearing, up to 50% of the total nation. Now, 30% of all the food we eat can only be grown if it is pollinated by bees or birds or insects, but the bee mostly. So would you support a ban on neonicotinoid pesticides in New York State to protect the honeybees of New York State?
It's, you know, I'm not familiar with this issue. It sounds from what you're telling me that I would certainly support the ban. What I'd like to do, since this is the first time I'm hearing about this issue, I've known about the problem with bees disappearing from the planet. I'd like to take a little more look at this, and you know, I'm certainly open to the suggestion of the ban. And
I will send you a great deal of information.
No, I mean, clearly what you're describing is a serious issue, and I'd like to get involved in this.
Okay, now, one of the single most important issues facing all of us is that we're given at the state level laws that we frequently cannot challenge because they're mandating certain public health issues. In New York State, for example, they're trying to get laws that mandate vaccines. 3 years ago, I led a group of people, there were 1,400 of us, over 1,000 nurses, that we stood on the Capitol steps, and we protested, and then I was invited in to meet with a group of physicians for the state government on why doctors, nurses, public health officials should not have to be given a mandatory H1N1 and flu vaccines, a total of four, all containing 24 micrograms of mercury, ethyl mercury, neurotoxin, and why there was no good science behind the vaccines protecting them in the first place. And I had the best scientific information, 110 pages of high-quality peer-review independent research, and we won the day. We got a stay. And then that forced them to do public hearings, and I did a 22-minute challenge to the state medical affiliates of really not... They came down on the side of bias. I couldn't understand why. We presented them with evidence, overwhelming evidence. Here's where my question goes. Right now in the United States, almost all states are now tracking 91 bills, including companion bills that appear separately in the House and Senate, across 33 states, and these are just about vaccines. Now, you have to ask, what are the primary ones? Well, they want to get a flu vaccine mandated, and then the Gardasil mandated. We have now determined through our own original investigative reports that all of these are being backed by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. For the benefit of those who may not be aware of it, for over 40 years, this group of over 300 to 400 major multinational corporations have been meeting in secret one to two times a year with state legislators. They sit in exotic locales. They are given a bill and coached on how to take that bill back into their state legislators and how to pass that as law. Then when the public is told we have a new law, almost all these laws, 800 alone last year in the United States, 800, they passed over 20,000 laws at the state level. These all benefit these 300 major corporations, and they're always at the detriment of the American public. So when I found dietitians' laws, and when I found them, that it would have excluded someone like myself. I'm a professor. I'm a PhD in human nutrition and public health science. I'm a 30-year anti-aging scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology. I would not have been allowed to practice nutrition or healthcare in New York State had the original law passed, because I would have. But had I not been a registered dietitian, I wouldn't have. So you could have a PhD from Harvard in health. You wouldn't be able to offer free advice. You had to have a dietitian's degree. And I said, this is insane. Fortunately, I am a registered dietitian. I graduated top of the class in dietetics and am registered. But think of all the qualified people who aren't. And I said, someone's behind this. And people said, no one's behind it. And the same bill suddenly started to appear in every state in America. And I think they won in 27 states, including New York State. So only a registered dietitian can offer nutrition counseling. In any case, now we know that behind all these mandates has been ALEC. We know that behind ALEC are the state legislators. We know that at least half of all American state legislators have worked with ALEC. And I believe that any politician working with ALEC against the benefits of their state in secret to pass corporately sponsored 1% benefit laws against the 99%, that person should resign from their state legislative position. Your thoughts on this, please. And what do you know about ALEC? And have you ever attended an ALEC meeting?
I didn't know ALEC. I never heard of it until you mentioned it. And I'm certainly obviously haven't attended a meeting. What you're describing, though, is something that's pervasive in government, especially in New York State and New York City, the influence of major corporations. And it's because money moves the system, not the people, unfortunately. So I'm not surprised by what you're telling me. And I think I have had a career in government, now in the state senate, but also in the city council, as to trying to do good government. I'm infuriated when I hear situations like this, that a private corporation is moving legislation not for the benefit of the people, but for the benefit of its own financial bottom line. So, again, send me some information on this.
Okay, I'll send you.
Take a look at this.
Let me tell you something. We have evidence of all the lawsuits that these corporations have had to settle for criminal behavior. And I'd like to know how organizations that could have caused the injury or death, like pharmaceutical companies, of hundreds of thousands of people, can work the system in the legislative process against the public and to their betterment. I will send you all the information, and I would like to see if you have the courage to call out the state legislators in New York and ask them to sign a petition that they will not go to any ALEC meeting. And those who have, let them declare what did they receive for it and what bills did they pass that they never were honest to their constituents. They were passing these on behalf of the 1%. Now, that said, and I'll send you the information so you can read it. Now I want to become something that really is impassioning to me and my brother Stephen, and that is the Coalition to Save New York City's Small Businesses is a program that highlights the dire situation of our city's small businesses that we face, literally the survival of businesses, we know it. Why? Because as a small business person, and I have been since I entered New York City has more small businesses than any other city in the world, between 165 to 175,000. They are the largest employers in the city. They are the number one job creators for the past 20 straight years and will be in the future. They are the stabilizers of our communities. Why would it be difficult for New York City to pass a law to prevent them from being forced out of business every time their leases expire? Who is behind this effort to keep the small businesses from thriving, and who is responsible? I need to know names. You were on the city council. You have this information. Please tell us the truth, the facts, because otherwise the future of New York City small businesses, and as an extension, the future of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people living in the New York and working in the New York City area are at risk. And with that, New York City's financial future is at risk.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. It's the fault of the real estate industry in the city of New York. And, you know, the mayor doesn't control the city. The city doesn't, the city council doesn't control the city. It's really the real estate industry, because they donate the most amount of money to elected officials running for office in the city of New York. They control the leases, because they're the property owners for most of the, almost all of the small business owners in the city of New York. And what happens, and what has happened, and that's why the small business communities is in crisis, is they're gouging the rent whenever the lease renewal comes up. And because there's no protection for small business owners, these landlords, greedy, unscrupulous landlords, can charge whatever they want. And that's why you can go in almost every neighborhood in the city of New York, and you can, you know, walk down these mom and pop commercial strips and find vacant store after vacant store. Because they force the business owner out when their lease is up. And I've heard situations like that where perhaps a small business owner was paying $5,000 a month. The lease renewal comes up, and all of a sudden the landlord wants $35,000. What small business can survive? The only way they could survive is that they start charging more for their product, and of course that affects the average consumer. But most of them will go out of business. I think their statistic is, businesses that have been in existence for 25 years or more, 75% of them are out of business. I mean, that's an incredible statistic. And it's all because of money and gouging the rent with the lease renewals. And what I'm trying to do with a bill that I've just introduced in Albany is to set up a mandatory arbitration and mediation program by which the landlords can't get away with this, that it gives the tenant, the commercial small business owner, some rights in the renewal process. Because, you know, the housing bubble burst, but we still have the commercial rent bubble. And it's interesting, because one might say, well, you know, why would the landlord want to force a small business owner out and have the store vacant? And the reality is, they charge so much in the lease renewal that they can force an existing business out of business. The store could sit vacant for a couple of years, but because they're going to charge so much more in the new lease, they'll make up that missed rent that they lost for 2 years, maybe in the first 6 months. This is a disgraceful situation on behalf of the landlords, but the effect it's having is driving small businesses into bankruptcy or out of business. It really is a disgrace. And we use the word crisis because the small business community is in crisis. And you correctly point out, they are the biggest employer in the city and state of New York. And yet we're doing everything we can to force them out of business. There's no words for me to describe how bad it is. And everything that you've said in our conversation here this morning, which is about the big corporations money moving the system, relates exactly to this issue. And it's about time that the people of this city and the small business community, which are the people who live here, have more access to continuing in business, have more of a say in the lease renewals, so that they're not being gouged by money-grabbing landlords.
And also, we as small businesses would like to see that the landlord pay their own real estate property taxes, and we are now paying it for them. Every small business in New York is paying the landlord's taxes on top of the rent.
Right.
And it's so unfair. Now, also, there's something that concerns me that came to my attention. On June 29, 2009, a hearing on the Small Business Survival was held before the City Council Small Business Committee bill. And the transcript I have of that, you were present.
Correct.
Now, tell us what happened where it went against the small businesses, went against those who were hoping to be able to survive in New York, and how it went for the landlords. Who was behind that? who are, I want to actually put a faces and names to those who support the big landlords and those who do not support the small businesses, even if they state otherwise.
Well, it's hard for me to put a name to individual council members, but I can tell you that after that hearing, we should have come out with moving the legislation ahead at that time. Because this is an issue I've been talking about going back to my days in the city council. And even the chair of the committee understood, David Yaske, understood the issues involved. But within the city, you have a mayor who's extremely powerful, who's very tied to the real estate industry, even though he doesn't need, you know, campaign donations from them. They're his friends. They're the fellow billionaires, multi-millionaires who run the city of New York. And then you have the Speaker of the City Council. The Speaker of the City Council controls what bills get to the floor.
That's Ms. Quinn.
Yes. And if you have a situation where she, in this case, Ms. Quinn, doesn't want a bill to get to the floor, it doesn't move. So even if a majority of council members are interested in, you know, in the bill at the time, she didn't want it to move to the floor, and it never got to the floor. And unfortunately, the author of the bill, I think it was Councilmember Jackson at the time, in my opinion, even though he was the author of the bill, didn't move it, wasn't forceful enough to really demand that, you know, we had that the bill get to a vote on the floor of the city council. Because that was one of the things that I did with some of my bills that I authored, that I challenged the speaker and, you know, to put it to a vote. Unfortunately, only the author of the bill can do that. But it's really the speaker and the mayor. And unfortunately, the speaker is running for mayor. And a lot of, again, it goes back to the huge amount of money that the real estate industry donates to candidates running for a public office in the city.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing this with us. We will keep on top of what's happening at the state level now that we know the power of ALEC and we know what they've done and how they've corrupted, completely subverted the true democratic process. More and more information on ALEC will be coming out. There's a whole documentary. I know a documentarian who's doing on ALEC, and I will see that you get all that information. Tony Avello, thank you for coming on the show. You've given us your position. We are going to follow up, and hopefully you will be one of the individuals who will help the people of New York get a labeling law to label genetically engineered foods and realize that Monsanto and the others spent over $50 million in California to barely defeat that by just 2 percentage points. But here in New York, we believe that we can get that labeling law. And also, I will send you a package showing you a documentary, multi-award-winning documentary called Knocking on the Devil's Door, or Deadly Nuclear Legacy, where the finest scientific minds, Helen Collicott, Michio Kaku, Harvey Wasserman, Carl Grossman, they're all in this, and Dana Shiva, talking about why Indian Point should be closed down. So we will send you information.
Great.
That will give you the true independent quality material to stand on the side of the public. If you can stand on the side of the public and not be bought, not be influenced by the large power corporate interest, then you are a rare person in our legislative process.
Well, I can tell you.
And what's the name of your bill?
It's the Commercial Lease Arbitration and Mediation Bill.
Okay, do that slowly again, because we want people to be able to support that.
Sure.
Because that's supporting small businesses staying in
Commercial Lease Arbitration and Mediation Bill. The number is Senate Bill 4717.
Okay, I'm going to ask everyone in this audience who lives in New York.
And it's also called the Small Business Survival Act.
Small Business Survival Act. My guest is Tony Avella, E-A-V-E-L-L-A, Democrat from the 11th New York Senate District. And you can reach out to your legislators and let them know that you're supporting this bill, because it's supporting the future of New York City. We have been hammered. The small business has been hammered. Hundreds of thousands of them have lost the businesses. And with that, a tax base that would have helped the state and employees who no longer work here. and we have to stop it at some point. So we thank you for your efforts, and we look forward to communicating with you again.
Great. Thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to that information.
Thank you. My guest, Tony Avella. I'm Gary Knoll. Time for Talk Back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary. Well, you were talking about prisons for profit before. And as the war on drugs subsides, the prisons for profit will need new slaves. And I remember I read an article that one of the executives said that they rely on, if there's any changes in the war on drugs or immigration, they would lose their workforce. I believe that the war on drugs is subsiding, and so I believe that the GOP love the sequester, because the sequester will be the cutting of funds to many, many social programs, and this will give rise to the rise in crime. And I believe that this will be a new resource for the prisons in profit. And so this is the concept. There are answers to third world labor. And I say no to the prisons in profit, especially for young African American men who have been really suffered from this. And it's deprived them of their youth, their education, and often taken their vote away. And so we're just.
Okay. We appreciate your call, Harvey. Luann Panessi, your turn.
Hello, Gary. Well, I have gotten so many emails on this, I feel like I have to bring it up. Apparently, there was an expo in New York City last weekend, and you showed up as just someone to walk around, and apparently you caused quite a flurry. It was the expo for kind of like a sustainability, green earth type thing, and I don't know if you wanted to mention anything about your experience there, but the people had such positive comments that they're emailing to me.
Well, on Sunday, I went down to the expo. I believe it was the first of its kind, and it featured all these new technologies, and it was packed. I thought it was very exciting. I saw so many original concepts and different types of little greenhouses you could actually put into a closet in your home. The technologies are great now, and it was all about sustainability. And so all positive, from different types of fabrics that people are looking at and better places to live and how to live on less and how to get off the grid and make transitions to healthier lifestyles, communities around the country. All this was there. So I commend the people who put this together. They had the right messages, hundreds and hundreds of booths. I don't know how many people were there over the 2 days. There were at least 5,000 people when I were there. So we need more of this going forward in the future. And I know that we'll get them, because, and almost every single person that I met there was some young person who had come up with an idea that that deserved some attention and support. They're doing good things. So good for them. So the next time a green expo comes to your area, I hope people support it. And that's that. Anything else?
Yes, I have an email here from someone who says that they've been in the media for a long time. And this is a gentleman who downloads your show. And I thought this was a very thought-provoking question. And he says, why aren't you seeking more publicity? He said, how can you have 42 million downloads from one server where there's no publicity going on? There has to be a method to your madness. And he says, you have to be one of the most, if not the most, downloaded personality in America. And he wants you to comment on that.
Oh, okay. Well, it's 51 million, not 42 million. There was a time when if you wanted to promote an idea, you had to align yourself with either a publisher or a media company that would get you some attention. I was featured in People Magazine, Time Magazine, The New York Times, all these other publications and media. But then came the Internet. And quite simply, I don't see that these other media are essential. When you take a look at how many people listen to this program and download it and share the information on it, it dwarfs any of the other media I can be exposed to. Also, today, much of the media has aligned itself with either a economic or political ideological point. And if you're not in alignment with that, you don't get any attention. Also, when you go on a show today, you can expect to spend about 3.5 minutes of actually talking about your issue. How can you really make an issue reasonable? How can you get your story out in 3.5 minutes? You can't. So, and you speak in little news bites. I don't like to do that. So with this medium, you can take all the time you want, lay out your arguments, write your articles, produce the documentaries, and share that with the world. The audience is no longer a localized audience. It's worldwide. Right now, Luann, when you're speaking, we have people all over the world in over 150 countries listening to this conversation. We have a whole lot of people, for example, in Israel that have been passing around the articles on veganism that I've written and sharing it with their vegan community. In turn, they've sent me the protests that they've done against animal rights abusers that are absolutely remarkable, and I commend them on that. So we're exchanging all the time. You can't do that in a regular, you know, media. You can't say to the New York Times, I'd like to send this message to the people in Ireland. No, they don't care. Here you can. So the future is the internet, not these older and at one time very useful and necessary media outlets. And so our movement is under the radar, and that's where I prefer it. But don't think for a moment that there's only a couple people on the fringe of life who are sharing information. There are tens of millions of us. We're a bunch. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
We're out of time. I want to thank people for listening. Now we're going in studio and say hello to my daughter, Shelley. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
Shelley, come up to the mic.
Hello.
Now, Shelley is a wonderful chef. For those of you over the years who've come to the detox retreats and down in Texas, upstate, you know her food. Well, she also is the chef up at our health food store at 89th and Broadway. And I came up with the idea after I tried some of her recent dishes that these are so good, maybe she should help others learn how to prepare them. So what are you going to be helping people prepare?
Okay, these are all gluten-free, raw, and vegan. We're going to do a lemon cheesecake, strawberry lemon cheesecake, a banana cream pie, raw chocolate, an almond cake with silken tofu, cacao ganache, and that should be all we can fit in for this session.
Good. Now, you're going to do this Friday night and Saturday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon. Friday and Sunday.
Yeah.
But you can only handle a few people, like 5 people in the kitchen.
Right.
Okay, good. So if someone wants to come and it's free, it's just done as a public service, and learn how to make some dishes from Shelley, you can call 646-926-5422, and she will take you on that merry journey of learning how to become a really good chef. Thanks, Shelley.
Okay.
And we're out of time, so let's say hello to Yutrice Lead. Hi, Yutrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we continue our discussion on terrorism, but looking at the twisted perversions of it. We accept it on one hand, and then we reject it on the other.
Okay. We're looking forward to that. Are you going to do a program, or have you done a program, on the terrorists we embrace versus the terrorists that we attack?
Well, that's coming. But this is a prelude to it, actually.
Good. Yutrice Lees, in a moment, on Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like,
stop it.
Right on.
There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, hey, hey. Talk to me, so you can see.